This episode is sponsored by Hacksoft, your Django development partner beyond code. More on their services later in the show.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django Web Framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vinson. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. And today we've got with us Lily Foote, who comes joining us again. Hello, Lily. How are you doing?
Hello again.
Hello. Thanks for coming on. It's been a while. So the big news was that you were elected to the steering council.
Yes, congratulations.
Along with you, Carlton. So,
well, yes, but you know, so we get to see far too much of each other now.
All right. All right. Well, so let's assume people don't know anything about that. Like what does that do, and what do you all do now that you're on it? I don't even know actually. Is it once a month? How often do you do meets, or is it all email list?
We've been doing weekly recently. As we got started, we were thinking we should just have a lot of meetings so that we can start working out where we're at. We've just started to maybe drop down to four every 2 weeks. But there's a lot to do and a lot to get started with. So
what have we been doing every week? Because it's not just tea and cakes. No.
That's true. We've been discussing various things. There were a few quick wins we got out of the way first, like confirming Marius, who was a previous fellow, as a merger.
And or releaser.
Is that it?
Or was it a merger? Was it a releaser? Oh, I don't know. I don't even know anymore. Whichever he was, he can now do that.
Yes.
Sorry, just for context, because once he lost his fellowship, he couldn't do that?
Yeah, so the under the Dept 10 rules, it used to be the case that everybody who was on the old Django core team could hit the merge button on Django. And it was like, well, hang on, that's the old core team. You know, people who hadn't been active for 10 years were just, you know, still had commit rights to Django. It's like, hang on, that's not kind of how it was. And so Dept 10 defined both a merger and a releaser role. And I think there's three or four mergers, the fellows, and then a couple of other people. And then there's three releases, or maybe even four releases. So there's the fellows who do it mostly, but then Marish, who's there, able to do one if one was on holiday and the other was ill, and Marish could step in and get the release out the door.
And that was something that came up just as the previous steering council was resigning. So it's not had anything happen with it until we got going.
Got it. And I'll just shout out to James Bennett, because I was on the board when he was doing a ton of work to kind of make all this happen. So I believe he spearheaded a lot of Dept 10.
Yes.
So a lot of invisible work he spent on that. I saw a little bit of it on the board, but you know, just to say, like, these things, you know, come at a cost, even though they're largely invisible to the community. So it's good to highlight them.
And yeah, I mean, and part of the issue, not the issue, part of the reality is that Django's a big ship and it takes an awful lot of effort to turn, because, and rightly so, it's got 20 million downloads a month, right? There's a lot of vested interests in, you know, various different points and lots of competing desires and wants, and okay, that's normal. It takes an awful lot of effort to get Django to move, and Dept 10 was crucial in doing that and setting us up for the next thing. What else have we been up to, Lily?
Several has got elected on various things, so we've started discussing some of those. I know Carlton's big on improving the third-party package ecosystem and making that more understandable and so on. Myself, I was looking to make contributor experience better, and we've been having a lot of discussions about why is that not great at the moment, what are various things we could try and do to change that. But there's a lot of stakeholders and it's a very thorny problem. I mean, looking over at the Linux kernel, they're dealing with similar problems of there's the Rust in Linux project who are wanting to make big changes, and then there's the maintainers who are wanting to make sure that they're not left supporting stuff without enough time and energy and so on. And we're facing similar problems. It's It's a tale of as old as time, I think.
Tale as old as time, songs of thrive. So, are there any sort of headline sort of things that you that stand out to you? So, you know, it's been a couple of months. We've been meeting every week. We talked with the fellows. We talked with, you know, all numbers of people. Mm-hmm. What sort of things stand out to you? Is like, okay, you know, this is doable. This isn't. This will take longer. This is quicker.
Yeah. I'm not sure there's any really, really quick wins with the contributor experience thing. One thing that I think we've agreed will be helpful is to try and get new feature ideas and discussion away from the attention of the fellows, because it's a lot of energy that it takes from them, and try and replace that with a process that is more community driven. And once we've, as a community, decided that actually, yes, we do want to pursue this idea, then it can get put into track and worked on and get the review and so on from the fellows. How exactly we manage that is still being discussed. We've long used the forum as a, hey, you've got a new feature idea, you should discuss it here first. One of the problems we have with that is that discussions tend to fade away and no one realizes that they're actually ready to make an action on. Sometimes there's disagreement and it filters out with no one agreeing, or sometimes people are like, yeah, that seems a good idea, but no one takes the next step of moving it on, as it were. So we're thinking about ways we can maybe formalize which ideas are worth thinking about more and having a way of tracking them better.
We don't need to turn this into a steering council meeting, but it's helpful for the rest of us to have a sense of what all is happening.
The conclusion to draw, at least from outside, is that there's lots of activity and there's lots of stuff going on. It's even if not instantly visible, but we have got a project, a GitHub project board that people can and have a look at and all the rest. We should link that in the show notes, but that just sort of shows what we're thinking about now actively and what we know exists for, you know, later on when we've got a bit more capacity.
What is that under? Is that under the Django GitHub?
It's under the Django org. And then I think it's a mystery. GitHub projects are an utter mystery.
All right. I'll find it and put it in there.
But I believe it's a project, an organizational level project called Steering Council something. And then there's also another repo with our meeting notes where we're putting on every week. You can go and see the meeting notes and what's been discussed and all the rest.
It's GitHub/Django/Steering Council. And then if you click the projects tab, you'll find it.
Okay. Me and Jeff should link to that in the newsletter as well, I think.
So one thing we wanted to do was be more visible, right? We wanted to show that. So, you know, if going in the newsletter would be amazing.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah. Now that I know about it, we'll put it in there. But, you know, I remember, you know, being on the board, the secretary would take all these notes and we had all these extra work to have some things were private and some things were public. But it was just, you know, in this dark, dusty corner of the Django project site. So it's sort of, anyway, so it's doing the work and then it's like telling people about the work. Speaking of which, we make sure that on the newsletter we're linking to the board notes, because we were for a while. Yeah. But
as well, we could put those in the show notes, because the board notes now go up on it's a whole Django app in the DjangoProject.com website with a model and a list view and all sorts.
Yeah, Jeff and I need, you know, because we have the Django updates, which various people do, which is great because it means it's in there every time and it's a quick way to see, oh yeah, there's double digit, you know, things added every week. So as much as I think we talk about, you know, being stuck and slow, like there are all these things happening.
So just on that little side thing, Lily, I just wondered, do you have any thoughts on how we might or are we communicating well enough? Do we need to improve? Do we have any ideas? And maybe the answer, no, I don't have any ideas, but like,
can I recommend the blog? The blog was good. You guys did a quick blog post. Like, that's super easy. Sorry to jump in. That's super easy for like the newsletter to link to, for people to post on social. To me, that seems like the easiest way to like link to stuff, for example.
I think I am worried that we're, even with the communication we are doing, we're, it's probably not enough, probably not visible enough. We do have our steering council minutes posted on the forum, I think. But I think until we start announcing that we're doing something rather than just discussing what we might do, it's difficult to be more open about what we're doing. I mean, talking about on the podcast like we were just now is one way, but there's a lot we're talking about, and not loads of it, I think, is filtering out at the moment. But hopefully that will change.
Yeah. There are no quick fixes, I guess, is a thing. So yeah. talking of quick fixes, this wasn't a quick fix at all. You were involved in this year's Google Summer of Code project.
Oh, yes. So
tell us all about this, because it's a headline feature of Django 5.2 coming up.
Yeah.
Now.
So composite primary keys, the oldest at the time open ticket in Django. I'd started to look at it a bit myself, but life circumstances and so on meant I wasn't making loads of progress. And then Ben comes along, says he wants to do it for Google Summer of Code. No one else has been proposing this, but he has a proposal. It seems good. So we say, yeah, let's give it a go. And he's just absolutely blasted through it.
And it's a success, right? It's in.
Yeah. There's still more to do. There's foreign key support and generic foreign key support specifically, but an awful lot of the work has been done, and it's, as far as I can tell, really solid.
Well, that's a big thing. I was just talking to someone the other day who didn't know that was coming, who was having to do that their own cobbled together way for performance reasons. So they were super excited.
I think it's also, there's a pull request which may or may not have been merged out. I haven't tracked it closely, but that uses composite primary keys somewhere in the Django website.
Ooh, fancy. Will that be to do with track in some way?
I think
way?
So.
Dog food it, yeah.
I was definitely talking to Baptiste at the last DjangoCon about track, because he busy maintaining that. And he was like, well, I would rewrite it as a Django app, but composite primary keys. It's like, well, you know, you've got no excuse, Baptiste.
Yeah, I don't 100% remember which area it was, but they had something that was basically a composite primary key, and the PR was to make it actually a composite primary key.
My sort of understanding is that it's going to be most useful for people integrating Django with a legacy database in the first pass, right? So you've got an existing schema that uses composite primary keys, and then you'll be able to attach a Django model to it much more easily.
Yeah, I think that's a very solid use case for it. There's also potential use cases in multi-tenancy.
Good.
I think the motivating use case for Ben, who's working on it. But yeah, there's various use cases for it, and especially once foreign key support's in, it should be very solid.
Yeah, and it's going to be another one of those exciting periods where the usage patterns emerge over the next couple of releases, right?
Yeah.
And how was mentoring? Like, you just sat back and gave the odd review?
We had weekly meetings, and I reviewed the code as it came in, and there wasn't much more to it than that. He had a very clear idea of what he was trying to do, so it was just about, okay, helping him understand the code base and making suggestions on how to do things a bit more Django-y. But it was actually quite hands off.
Okay, super.
And now you have to remind us, I know you've with Django Knot, you've been a navigator, and then I believe
I was a navigator on the pilot session of Dragonaut Space, and then life and Google Summer of Code got in the way, and I haven't done it again. I would like to, but time constraints.
Yeah. Well, but just the fact that it's, you know, it's Django Nauts who are often doing the updates on Django itself, and as I think we probably discussed a year ago, the whole point is it shouldn't be the same people dipped into every time. It's like, you know, when you have the bandwidth, contribute. And so it's great that there's an organization and structure around it to facilitate that. So it's not the case
I think it's one of the biggest wins of the past few years, more than any of the technical contributions, even though composite prime keys is amazing. I think Django Nauts Space is even better still.
Yeah, good.
I would agree. So there's a couple of things we want to talk about, but I feel like coming from these highs of Steering Council, Google Summer of Code, so you're willing to share with us that at the moment you're in between jobs because you were made redundant of all people. Are you willing to expand upon that? Because so many people have trouble getting a job or keeping a job. And then for someone like you to lose their job is... I think it's helpful for people to hear about that because it seems quite shocking, but it happens.
Yeah. So, I started back in November, and I was getting settled in, working on understanding the code base, doing a bit of support for other people in the team, that sort of thing. And at the and then in January, as I was expecting to pass probation, which my manager had told me he was expecting me to do, I discovered that the company had overhired and were having to do a redundancy round. And I believe a lot of my team went with that as well as just me. But yeah, job hunting again. It's not the most fun experience.
Well, but it's, you know, companies, there's a lot of cost to companies doing that, right? Obviously, they're not trying to, but just from a, for them to hire a team and let go of a team, clearly they didn't want that.
No.
Obviously, you didn't want that.
Indeed.
But it happens. So, well, and then, so where are you at now, right? Because I know when we spoke to you last, you worked on Colo for quite a while, and you're doing a lot of Rust. Are you... Mm-hmm. What would you say the split is between Rust versus Python Django these days for you, or in terms of your, you know, dive in right now?
Well, given I'm unemployed, it's all side projects at the moment.
Yeah.
So,
do you have a preference, I guess I would say, right? Because, you know, we often lose people to Rust and they don't come back.
I mean, at the moment I'm trying to do both. It's Rust is exciting. I love a lot of the power it gives me and the performance, but I also really love Django for its flexibility and just ability to get something working that is very easy to get to production quality. It's battle tested and stuff like that.
Well, let me ask you, because I'm a little late to the party, but and I'll probably attach it to this. Hopefully I have a tutorial finally on UV and Django. So UV is written in Rust. It's the package manager that's taking over the world. You must have some thoughts on that and how they did that, right? Because they did it from scratch as opposed to cobbling together other existing pieces the way most of the other tools out there had done.
Yeah,
and it wants to be the cargo for Python, right? Mm-hmm. So
yes, know, exactly.
Double aspect.
Cargo, the Rust package manager.
It's very impressive. There was a keynote at a Rust conference by the founder of Astral.
Charlie Marsh.
Yes, that's the name. About a lot of the stuff that they were doing with UV and from a Rust perspective. And that's a great watch. I highly recommend it. I've not actually used UV much myself. It seems really solid and it's taking over a lot of the Python Mindshare at the moment.
I should go watch that one
because
I was just,
I think.
I'll link to it. He's given a number of talks. He's quite good at it. There was one to, I think, was it Jane Street, which is like a quantitative trader. So it was a little more hand wavy, but he was, and this was, I think, 4 months ago, but he was saying how, you know, it launched in February. And so 4 months ago is what, like November, it was already 10% of all PyPI downloads were using UV. And, you know, it almost seems too good to be true, right? That it, on the one hand, has like a single, you know, lock file for everything. It also can do your Python, and it's fast, but it's so fast that you can do things like move things out of CI into pre-commit, like so fast that it can change the way we work. So that in some ways is the most interesting thing to me, because that was one example, but I'm sure there's others. If you just don't even have to think about any of this stuff, you know, that sounds great. And anyways, that's kind of what I'm super excited about. And
yeah, I think as long as you are willing to learn the new workflows, it's probably a really solid choice these days. My problem is that I have my own workflows that I really like, and I haven't just felt like investing the time to adapt to UV.
Well, sure. Right. And I think it, you know, to the, you mentioned the sort of battle-testedness of Django, you know, it's, I believe it's VC funded. They still aren't at a 1.0 commercial release. Everything looks positive so far, but that is an additional risk, right?
Yes.
That who knows, at some point they're going to have to do something, right? They have Ruff, they have UV.
Yes. Monetizing in the dev tools space is tricky.
I mean, Docker managed it, I guess. Yeah. Right. So I'm sure that's an obvious, but, you know, it's also interesting, you know, Docker is on Teams, right? If you all just use UV and it's all in a TOML file, like, does that remove the need for Docker in some situations? Like, I'm still a little bit ignorant on it, but it seems like it would in some cases.
Maybe. I tend to avoid Docker unless I have to use it for work reasons anyway, so...
Like Docker for local development, it's just like sticking needles in your eyes for no reason. Like, why
Carlton's, Carlton's. Yeah, I hopped
so
on.
So if
all...
UV can bootstrap my local environment, then you know,
well,
that's an interesting proposition.
Well, and the whole Python thing, like the PyEnv, you know, you don't need PyEnv if you can just put it in UV.
Yes,
like that's such a huge thing for just for beginners, right? Because, gosh, like. It's a minefield. I mean, and I'll shout out to my employer, PyCharm has UV support now, which is cool. Now, there's a question of levels of support, so we're, you know, going to have even more integration. But it's pretty wild that something that's a dev tool that's foundational can be so popular so fast. Because this is not a space, like there's an XKCD on it that I saw Charlie put in one of his talks. Like, this doesn't usually happen around standards. Right. So
I think there's been a lot of frustration with the legacy tools in this space, which is one reason it's achieved such good adoption. They've got a lot of the UX right with it, as far as I can tell, especially with the performance.
But as well, the single tool, right? It's the single tool that does it right. It shows how, you know, a decent amount of money goes an awful long way, right? So they've managed to fund a team and actually put them on it full time. And all of a sudden, all these problems that were insoluble for a decade or more are resolved in the space of a year. Money is the fixer for of all evils.
Well, it's the combination of the Rust bit, but then just, even if they just rewrote it all in Python from scratch with the money, there would be some improvements, you know, maybe not as much, but there would still be no one had the desire or the time to do all that. That's kind of why I'm curious. I want to watch that Rust talk because I've read a little bit about it, but I want to understand a little bit more what actually they all did from scratch.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of clever people who've worked on it and therefore a lot of clever ideas in how to really optimize things.
Hacksoft is your development partner beyond code. From custom software development to consulting, team augmentation, or opening an office in Bulgaria, they're ready to take your project to the next level. And Carlton, so are you a UVer or whatever the phrase is?
No, I'm not a UV. You know me. I like.
Well, that's why you sounded like you were on board with it. That's...
No, I'm interested. I'm looking at it. I'm investigating it. I'm not using it in battle. Like mate, it takes an awful long time to get me to change tooling. Like an awful long time. Like,
well, all of us. Again, this speaks to. I mean, I haven't done anything real with it other than toy projects because it's kind of like, well, if I'm not facing speed problems and my team isn't crazy frustrated, like,
yeah,
no, why would
it,
I?
It doesn't. All of the problems it solves, I think, brilliant. None of them are problems that I have. And so I'm happy to watch it. I'm probably in the position where if somebody said, should I use UV? I'd be like, probably. The fact that I'm not using it doesn't mean you shouldn't. I'm old man herding goats on the mountain. That's me. And you don't need to copy what I'm doing at all. I'm slightly skeptical about the VC funding position, I have to admit. I'm slightly more concerned about that than other people. You know, other people are happy to say, oh, well, let's not worry about it. A bit of money is all good. But if money is all good, that's super. I'm personally interested in making sure that I know what the state of play in the community tools are so that, you know, if it all does go horribly wrong, I don't feel like, oh, God, and we're now trapped in a, you know, VC hellhole. Now, that's just... Yeah, that's very unlikely to ever come to pass. And it's, you know, the Astral team are all great and they have no intentions to all that. But, you know, just as a matter of, you know, diversity within the community, I'm happy to hang out with my crusty tooling for a little while longer.
I feel very similar to Carlton on this, except I wrote my own tooling.
Right, yeah, well, you would. You would.
Well, for a long time I wouldn't, but recently I have, yeah.
Well, I'm quite sure I'll be doing a PyCon US demo of UV with PyCharm, amongst other demos. So I'm as much as I would love to hang out in a cave and herd goats, I'm forced to.
No. I think I absolutely have no problem with other people doing it. But I've been using the same solution. I've been using Virtual Chain Wrapper for 15 years plus, and I have no intention of changing anytime soon.
But I think it's this interesting to me. Some of these tools or things like this barbell shape, where on the one hand, like power users or speed matters. Boom, like, yeah, they'll flip over. And then the beginner thing, right? And this is the, like, the three of us are a little removed from being pure beginners. But, God, like, you know, you tell someone, okay, just install Python. Okay, like.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, there's so many tools, so many ways to mess it up. And then if you can, so I'm, in some ways, I'm almost most, you know, just from the teaching angle, I'm most excited by that because I have seen how ridiculous that is. And,
Yeah, I think that's, for me, that's the most exciting thing as well. I think an easy, reliable, it works, here's how you bootstrap your Python environment, which isn't going to confuse beginners. I think that for me is the speed is a bit like speed schmied, you know, like.
And it's the same thing that everyone else is on. Everyone's on exactly the same one, you know, that's, yeah. I mean, and even, I think this is a little bit maybe hidden to some of us, but like just installing Python has really improved in the last 5 years. I mean, python.org installer is great. Microsoft with the Windows support. I mean, you know, even 5 years ago, it was like, I had, you know, every time I got a new computer, I was like, oh, this is going to blow some time. And now it's, I don't want to say trivial, but if you know the steps, it's not so bad. So
I have robbed one bit from UV is that I've started using the standalone builds on servers because I was using PyEnv and it just, I feel no need to compile Python. I would really, really love if python.org would ship pre-compiled.
Python standalone stuff is amazing. That was actually created before Astral, and Astral have adopted it since.
They're using it.
Release the maintenance burden from.
But I'm not actually using downlit UV to fetch the standalone builds as a sort of, you know, nominal flag in the ground for no reason, totally pointless.
Well, if
anyway,
I can switch,
Lily, you can go on.
The templates, Django Rusty templates,
yes.
Right?
All your side projects built in Rust. We're rewriting Django in Rust.
Yeah, tell us about this.
I kind of am, but I mean, after I left Colo, I was. Looking for some way to continue using Rust, and templating is one of the more performance sensitive areas of Django, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
From a
absolutely.
CPU side of things rather than an IO. So I thought.
But also, just to give context there, any request, it's going to go, where's your time go? It went database templates, like one and two. So anyway, carry on.
Yeah. Sorry. So I was thinking, well, I love Django. I'm really enjoying Rust. What's the best way to put those together? And templates was the answer I came up with. So since autumn last year, I've been trying to build a parallel implementation of Django's templating language using Rust. And I'm aiming for 100% compatibility of rendering, so it's can really just drop into an existing Django code base and get all the potential benefits of having been rewritten in Rust. I'm not at a stage to do any benchmarking, so I don't know if I've succeeded yet on the performance side of things, but once it's complete for a given version of Django, I can then start looking into benchmarking and performance improvements and all that sort of stuff.
Okay, so that sounds really, really, really exciting. Can I ask you a question? If I've got a custom template tag,
yes,
how would that work? Because that would be written in Python.
Yes. Right. This is an unsolved problem right now.
Right.
I haven't got to it. It's been on my radar as the thing that I am going to need to solve at some point, but I haven't got round to it yet.
Okay, fair enough. Good straight that away, though. So.
I have some ideas, but I haven't looked deeply and really grappled with that one yet. I'm just trying to get the core stuff working. The other thing I'm really trying to do with it is give better error messages than Django gives.
Yes.
If you get an error in Django templates, you get this horrible traceback of Django templates internals, and it's not really very easy to understand what's gone wrong often.
Now, we could fix that, though, couldn't we? Isn't there a way of marking frames as to be excluded from tracebacks somehow?
Possibly.
I was reading the Rich docs yesterday because I was doing it, and they've got a traceback thing where you can say skip these frames, skip that frames, and I was like, we could do with that in Django, because who wants 30 frames of template internals? Like, instrumented render 48 times as you go down the node list?
Yeah, I definitely encourage anyone looking for a fun issue to try and tackle that. We should create a ticket in tracks so that someone could do that. Because I think that'd be a useful thing to have, and it's probably not too difficult. Maybe.
I love it. Can I ask your take on, because I love the Django template language, and I one thing I love in particular is just not defining a particular variable, deliberately not defining a particular variable, and then so having the whole block just vanish away because, you know, the if defaults to empty and it knows what to do and it doesn't raise an error. But lots of people don't like that. They're like, no, yes. I really want this to be much more strict with me. Do you think there's any way we can sort of have a template say, look, this is what I'm after, and you could lint it maybe, that the context you passed actually did have the variables that the template was looking for or something. I don't know. What's your thought in that space?
I think there's some room for exploration there. It would be nice if Django could be more strict for the people who want it to be more strict. The trouble is I don't think it can be a global setting like most of Django's template settings are, because existing stuff like the admin and third-party stuff might much rely on that feature. So I think what would be necessary is a way to limit it to templates that have been written by the developers of the project. and then they can opt into being strict on their own templates, but fall back to not strict when interacting with these upstream templates.
The idea, an idea come half comes to mind. This is just me making stuff up as we go along now, but idea half comes to mind of like having a template tag that sort of defines what the expected context is, and then takes the context and sort of lints whether those are true or not. But we'll have to brainstorm this at DjangoCon.
there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of stuff in templating that actually could be explored and improved, and it hasn't really had loads of attention for a while with the popularity of APIs over templating.
Yeah.
But I think especially with HTMX, templating is coming back into vogue in Django. So
yeah, I think absolutely
it's happened. But
so have you seen all these exciting component libraries, the Django components, Django Bird, DJ Angles, like these various slippers?
I've seen some of that from a distance. I've not dug deep.
You haven't got one which you're waving the flag for yet?
No. I mean, well, I haven't really worked on a Django project for a while. Because with Colo, I was writing tooling for programmers, not writing a website, really. So I'm really kind of rusty on some of this stuff.
But also you're more of a back end, you're more of an ORM expert, right?
I mean, anything back end has always drawn my interest. Front end has always been complicated and scary.
Well, can I ask, what do you feel the pull at all to, you know, given your skills, are you still happy in webland, or do you feel that the data science pull at all?
I don't know about data science, but
well, I guess everything else, right? That's the problem with data science, is it encompasses just like everything else with programming languages that isn't web.
Certainly DevTools is interesting to me. Rust is known primarily as a systems language, so getting into doing more systems type stuff could be really interesting. I know that the embedded world is really cool, but I've done basically nothing to know how to work with that. But there's a lot of areas of programming that I would actually quite like to explore more. But there's only so much time you have. And
Yeah, right.
It's a question of how much do you lean into your existing skill set and how much do you try and do something new. And yeah, I'm really trying to find that balance, both in my open source life, like building Django Rusty templates, and in my work life, whatever turns out to be next for me.
Well, one more question, then I'm out of questions for both of you, actually. So in the Rust world, which I know, Carlton, you've spent some time there as well. So taking Cargo, taking Package Manager, and then applying it to Python, are there any other obvious things that Rust does that Python, with a bit of money and brains, could or should adopt, do you think?
I haven't thought of anything obvious yet. Carlton, any ideas while I concentrate?
The thing I'd like to see more, I was going to ask you a little bit about this, is that if we could improve the story around the Rust to Python integration. So there's maturing, it makes it very easy to package up, but it's still a bit scary. You know, if I'm quote unquote just a Python developer, and then I see this, oh, I could go and build something, this Pyo 3 thing, what's going on? Ah, it's still, you know, you've still got to dedicate 2-3 days to sit down and plow through it. And oh yeah, now I've got my Hello World from Rust.
Yeah.
That was quite a lot of it. Go on.
Yeah. I think the Python Rust interoperability story is actually really solid.
It is, but still,
if you compare it to what you had to do to get an extension module before Rust came along,
No.
C, C++, Cython, it's all way more painful, at least my impression from the outside, than I ever found the experience with Rust. I think the maturing developer and team have done an amazing job of just taking advantage of the Python packaging backend evolution over the past years and built something really solid. And Pyo3 is a really solid piece of technology too. I've actually joined the maintenance team of that, so.
Oh, have you? Yeah. There you are. There you are, folks. If you're looking for a Django ORM expert who also does Rust on the maintenance team of the Rust Python integration framework.
Yeah.
I think you need to think bigger. You need to go raise some VC funds and do something. I mean, right? I mean, you have the background, right? You have the perfect background of Python, Rust, DevTools. Mm-hmm. I don't know what specifically that thing is, yeah. But you know, that's all you need to do is say, yeah, I can do it. And, you know, Astral's doing it. So, you know, there's VCs are trying to spend the money that they have. Anyways.
I wonder if there's one thing we could pick up from the Rust ecosystem, which is additions. So particularly in Django, we've have very strong backwards compatibility constraints, correctly so, because we've got those 20 million downloads a month that we have to keep thinking about. But additions in Rust allow, you know, you to step forward and say, no, we're going to drop compatibility here and we're going to step forward, and now you have to be using this edition if you want to be using this.
Well, it's a bit more nuanced than that with Rust, because they have extremely strong backwards compatibility. I think you can use a new edition in your own code, but depend on code that's written in an older edition. And they've defined these editions in such a way that the compatibility between those is still there.
They're sort of forward compatible.
Yeah, so you can opt into the better behavior, but in a way that still integrates well with what's gone before, which does mean that you can't make some backwards incompatible changes that you would like to, because you can't keep that cross-edition compatibility. But I would like I think Django has some rough edges and bad defaults and stuff like that, that there's quite a bit of resistance to changing and improving. I would like us to find a better way to handle that.
And something like additions. Like something.
I mean, maybe. I mean, what's the difference between an addition and an LTS? Maybe we could do something where we improve defaults every LTS cycle or something.
Okay. Well, I would have to see how that rolls out. One thing I wanted to ask you is about, we've talked about UV and we've talked about Rust, and one thing that Rust does very well is CLIs. And,
yes.
You know, we've talked about the developer experience of UV and how they've nailed it. And there's some, you know, like, wouldn't it be nice if we could, you know, improve the DX of Django somehow?
Yeah, well, there are some really nice libraries for command line stuff in Python as well. I really like Click. There's a terminal user interface. Is it textual in Python? I can never remember.
Yeah,
which
textual.
Ones. Yeah. And I suspect there's a third-party library out there somewhere that integrates those with Django's management commands.
Oh, there
but
is.
If there isn't,
Fancy.
There should be.
Yeah, no, there is one as well. And there was a release of this Typer as well, which sits around Click and makes it type hinted.
Yeah.
And there was a release of Django Typer as well quite recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... Yeah, I think it might be nice to start depending on Click in Django so that we don't have to deal with argparse, because argparse is kind of crufty.
It's not tight enough for you, you know? You like it?
It's I mean, it works, but it's verbose and it's... I think it's been demonstrated that the third-party ecosystem has done better, and it would be nice if Django opted into that, I think.
I've got one sort of half idea, is that we should build all these things just as around Django, and rather than necessarily trying to force the Play-Doh into the shape it doesn't want to go in.
Sure. Then the problem becomes discoverability rather than backwards compatibility. Trade-offs.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll stop.
Well, we've covered a bit of time. Is there are there any things that you wanted to mention or we should have asked you about while you have a microphone, literally and figuratively?
Nope, nothing's coming to mind.
Okay. So I've got to ask, you run the steering council, you've got all the power, you've got a magic wand to wave. What's the thing you're going to fix in Django? Well, it can be community, it doesn't have to be framework.
Yes. I mean, I ran for election on this, it's got to be trying to make the contributor experience work better for everyone involved than it has been before.
Okay. Fair enough.
Well, we've covered all the things. So this episode will come out in 3 weeks. So if your LinkedIn profile says you're still looking for work, people should reach out to you. But again, yeah,
I've just got to say one more time, Lily, contributor to the ORM, Rust thing, on the Pi 03 maintenance team, you know, there isn't much more you could ask for if you're looking for someone, you know, with some chops.
Yeah, but I appreciate you being willing to talk about it publicly, because this is a thing that happens and it's not just newcomers who have this issue. And so thank you for agreeing to that.
Yeah. My pleasure.
So we're going to have links to a whole lot of stuff, including Lily's packages, and check them all out. And we are DjangoChat.com. We'll see everyone next episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode was sponsored by Hacksoft, your Django development partner beyond code. Learn more about their services in the link in the description.